Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack the big political stories of the week. My name is Mike Siluma. Ahead of the forthcoming local authority elections, the ANC established a National Electoral Committee that will oversee the nomination of candidates. To tell us more about the workings of the committee and the problems that it seeks to address, we're joined now by our guest this week, the former president of the country and now the head of the ANC's electoral committee, Mr. Halima Mutlanthe.
Man, this aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shit.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come in?
Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Mike. Good afternoon to your viewers and listeners.
Yes, maybe first to kick off, what was the genesis of the electoral committee?
Well, it's a 52nd National Elective Conference. The ANC resolved to establish an electoral committee of the organization, and the way the resolution was couched and the mandate of this committee was to create rules for selection and election and nomination of candidates, and that, you know, the aim being that the ANC should have competent, qualified candidates, and for that to work, particularly for local government elections, the electoral committee had to include a rule that allows for community processes as the penultimate stage of such nomination. Whereas in the past, nominations would have taken place at a branch general members meeting, then thereafter, you know, processed through the regional list conference and the provincial list conferences, and to be finalized at the national list conference. Now, the most important step is that the branch nominates four candidates for, that is, constituency, and about six for PR, and those names must then present it to a general meeting of the community within that ward, and the nominated candidates would then be afforded an opportunity to present their credentials to the community. Should the community not be happy with some or all of the four, they are given the right to nominate those that inspire confidence. And the rule then says those are the ones that the ANC accepts. Yeah.
Yes, but maybe at the beginning, what is it? What is the problem that the establishment of the committee was trying to resolve?
Well, the committee, as I said, was mandated to come up with rules, precisely because the delegates to conference were aware that the nomination procedures were being, you know, manipulated, and you know, predetermined outcomes were simply, you know, presented as though these were outcomes of proper democratic processes within the organization. And so there was a concern about the fact that this manipulation of procedures ends up producing candidates who actually don't even command respect within the community, within the said ward. And that if the community has no confidence in those that the ANC presents as candidates, the community, even if it's a community which is supportive of the ANC, would not vote for the ANC.
And the National Committee is a permanent structure?
Yes, the National Committee is a permanent structure. It's made up of 8 members. If I may share with you the names, we have Ms. Dinkohani, Ms. Nora Fakude, Ms. Theo Steele, Ms. Loretta Jacobus, Ms. Busi Chwete, Ms. Ngele Ntingana, Amos Masondo, and myself. So there's 8 of us. I was asked to chair this committee, and Galen Tingana is my deputy.
Okay, and these are very senior members of the ANC. Presumably, it is people who are not involved in the hurly belly of the functioning of the organization.
Yes, of course. You know, some of the members, you know, like Theo, for instance, comes from the labor movement. Loretta comes from the SACP. Nora Fagude comes from the Veterans League. Busi Chwete from the ANC Youth League. And so the NEC appointed three of us, and the rest had to come from these structures. On the understanding, of course, that these are people who do not, this is not a federalist structure or an alliance structure. It's an ANC structure. So even though they come from those organizations, they serve in their own right and capacity as members of this committee. And the committee, of course, as I said, is tasked with the responsibility of coming up with rules that should govern how nomination and selection of candidates takes place.
What would you say are the criteria that the ANC is looking for in electoral candidates? You know, the people that would be put forward. What are the key things that you're looking for?
Well, first and foremost, it's you know, expertise as well as experience. You know, so some people would have served, you know, at various times in municipalities and or even, you know, legislatures and so on. And so they have some experience, working experience of, you know, issues of governance. And otherwise, over and above that, we need the qualifications and skills relevant to the work that, say, a municipality would be involved in.
There's a view that says that the ANC decided to establish the committee and to put together the rules, to establish the rules in order to ward off the threat that may be posed by independent candidates. What do you say to that?
Which rule are you referring to?
The idea that candidates being put forward must be put forward to the communities as well, and that community members can stand, yes, and, you know, as independents supported by the ANC.
Yes, of course, that's one of the recent experience that where the ANC was accused of imposing candidates on communities, the ANC had to respond to that accusation and admit that, yeah, if the community is not involved, then, you know, the in a community of 10,000, you know, residents or registered voters, for instance, you'll find that the ANC branch is made up of 300, 400 members. The notion of the quorum is that only 50 plus 1% majority suffices for the meeting to correct. So this has had to be responded to positively, because if your candidate has the approval of the community, or, you know, commands some respect and confidence of the community, it's the same community that's going to be voting.
The other question that's related to the process is, and it's a broader issue, really, about a constitutional, if you like, a question in a sense, that public representatives, such as the ones that, you know, will be put forward in the forthcoming elections, but also nationally or provincially, that they should be recallable, that it's all well and good to elect people and, you know, candidates and put them in office, and then after that, you've got no control over what they do. You have to wait for another 5 years. Well, what's your view to that?
Well, that's really a function of the Electoral Act, because at the moment, the Electoral Act provides for proportional representation, both at national and provincial levels. And at local level, it has a hybrid of constituency-based. That's why you have ward councillors. Those are constituency-based. And then you have PR councillors. So it's a hybrid system at that level. And of course, I know there's been debates, you know, about the electoral system, that perhaps people who feel that, you know, once they voted the parties, you know, then compile lists of those who take up the seats in the legislature or parliament, and they never ever, you know, even though there are constituency offices, but the because the country is not demarcated, you know, to allow for constituency based elections, they hardly ever get to interact with their public representatives, except by, you know, witnessing how they perform on television and stuff like that. So that debate is ongoing. At some point, I would imagine that, particularly if the hybrid system at local government level proves that it actually works effectively, then it would be easy to convince, I think, the nation that it should apply, you know, at provincial and national level as well.
Yes. Just to come back to the more immediate question of the local elections, you know, in our overall democratic dispensation or constitutional dispensation, how important is local government in the transformation of South Africa?
Well, local government is the most important tier of government, in the sense that it is you know, if you like, the rock face. It is the where you know, residents and citizens interact with government very directly. Also because it is constituency based as well. And in terms of how people look at hierarchies, you know, the tendency is to say national is more important, followed by province and then local. But truth be told, local is far much more important. In fact, if local governments are properly constituted and structured with the understanding that they are a state at local level, then it's easier to with working functional, efficiently run municipalities, you can then develop local economies and grow local economies. In many countries, in countries like Europe, and in places like Europe, countries such as the Federal Republic of Germany, Italy, and so on, you find that oftentimes national governments are coalition governments, and they tend to be unstable. But the local governments are the pillars, because, you know, they function efficiently. The local economies are growing and thriving, and therefore citizens, you know, can get quality service even when there is no national government. Belgium at some point went on for almost 3 years without a national government, but everything still functioned properly. So that's a very, very important tier of government. Yeah.
How would you rate the quality of cadres in the ANC today, given them that we've had so many complaints about performance, especially at local level, either by councillors or mayors, or, you know, a combination of both? You know, how would you rate the, you know, the quality of leadership that there is at the moment?
Well, you know, firstly, I think there's been a correlation of the elected political leadership and the administration, and it is that conflation which has led to you know, acts of inefficiency and even corruption, precisely because we tend to think of a municipality just by looking at the elected councillors and not the administration. Because, you know, for any municipality to be efficient, it has the structure, the administrative structure, has got to be established and structured such that it outlives the elected representatives. Because each time, every 5 years, you go to elections, you end up with new public representatives and so on. But the administration has got to be permanent. That's how it's going to, you know, develop institutional memory and capability. And because if you know, each time a pipe bursts in the locality, and it takes a councillor to come and explain what has happened, you already know that something big is amiss there, because there's got to be the engineers of the municipality who are very, you know, familiar with the layout of the piping systems, its age, and how to service that, and so on. So these protests about service delivery are primarily because we have not developed a template of the skills mix that are required for an efficient local government to happen. We tend to focus on the political side. And so we need to get to a point where we have we actually develop a template. Just to give you a sense, Mike, you know, the city of Cape Town, the metro, has more engineers than the whole province of Mpumalanga.
Which means what?
Which means that the city of Cape Town has better capacity of maintaining infrastructure and ensuring that things work as they should. So if a whole province has less engineers, that's why year in and year out the Auditor General will tell you about how much work has been outsourced and the amounts paid to service providers, whereas if you know the capacity is there, because just knowing how the water system works and how to maintain pumps and all of that is an important skill which must be there. How to ensure that the finances and the books of the municipality works, you need a CFO. So there are certain skills that ought to be there. And the criteria and the template, as I said, should be very clear, you know, about the requirements.
And then there's the internal issue of conflict and fighting, you know, in over nominations. You know, some people have even lost their lives, you know, in some of the branches. You are a member of the ANC, you know, of long standing. Where does this come from? I'm sure in your time, this did not happen. What is causing that?
Well, it's happening precisely because, in many local areas, there are few employment opportunities because the local economies aren't growing, aren't creating opportunities and jobs. And so being a public representative guarantees some kind of income. And in areas where there are no other opportunities, so people tend to fight over these opportunities of being public, serving as public representatives, because then they are guaranteed some income, and so they resort to violence. Even my own take is that you know, anyone who acts violently in an organization should be expelled forthwith. They really should, and to establish that kind of orderly system is possible, you know. But you know, if people resort to undemocratic methods, I mean, at the level of the African Union, it has been, you know, accepted that no government that is a result of a coup d'etat would be recognized. And that has reduced the number of coups on the continent. Because a coup, you know, people use violence to ascend to office. And so we should not tolerate that even in our organizations at local level. Yeah.
Just lastly, the all these issues that we've touched on in terms of the quality or behavior of members, you know, in the ANC, what can the ANC do to address them? You know, does, for example, it's all well and good to at the tail end assess people and say, well, are they suitable or not suitable to stand as public representatives? But what sort of education and development actually is happening in the ANC to make sure that those people actually do come through?
Well, one of the requirements that has now been inserted in the rules is that those who accept nomination must have completed certain modules and with the online, with the Oliver Tambo School of Leadership. Yeah. That's a requirement.
So all of them would, irrespective of other qualifications?
All of them.
That's all we have time for on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly this week. Dr. Khalima Mutante, our guest for this week, of course, is the former president of the country and head of the ANC's electoral committee. And we'd like to thank you very much, for joining us on the podcast this week.
Thank you very much, Mike, for the invitation, and thank you to our viewers and listeners. Thanks.
And by the way, you can find a podcast of this conversation on iono.fm, on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to source your podcasts. Until next time, stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places. I'm Masi Luma, signing off.